Top of the news this evening is speculation concerning the real facts behind the Department of Health announcement about a radioactive spill supposed to have occurred yesterday at the state nuclear plant.
I know what you're thinking. Mine's bigger than yours, right? Isn't that fair? Throw it away. All right?
Tons of popcorn there.
Yeah.
And all you gotta do is go climb a tree to go eat it.
It was a night like any other night. Then something happened.
Oh, good Lord. It's unbelievable. It's horrible.
Welcome to the Really Awful Movies Podcast, a celebration of low-budget cinema.
The sleep of reason gives birth to monsters.
Hi, my name's Chris, and along with Jeff, we're bringing you the very best and worst of horror, sci-fi, post-apocalyptic wasteland, kung fu, and women in prison movies from the 1960s to today. Check us out at reallyawfulmovies.com, part of the Crypt TV family. From our downtown Toronto headquarters, here's episode 199, Army of Darkness.
Army of Darkness.
You can't spell swashbuckler without A-S-H, Ash.
Interesting.
Yeah, I was thinking about that on the way over here, and I was also thinking that I have absolutely no, I mean zero recollection of this movie in its entirety. I do not remember one single iota. I remember I was pissed off at it because I had this conservative mindset at the time for my horror. I think it bled into our Texas Chainsaw sequel discussion, where I was so incensed that they really went haywire for a new direction for the sequel, and this one, I didn't know what to make of it. I was considerably younger upon revisiting. Luckily, I'm happy to say I rather enjoyed it, and I actually watched it a couple times this week, so
I gotta say that I love The Evil Dead. I love Evil Dead,
the original,
Evil Dead 2. I love Ash vs. Evil Dead on TV. I love Evil Dead the Musical, which we saw twice. And I had the pleasure of interviewing the creator, Chris Bohn. Army of Darkness, to me, and this is a film that's two things. Number one, it's beloved. People adore this movie. When you think of the character of Ash, you're basically thinking, Ash Williams, of the character that he plays in Army of Darkness, because the Bruce Campbell plays Army of Darkness, because there's such an evolution of Ash from 1 to 2 to, can't even say 3, Army of Darkness. Interestingly enough, the original title for this movie that Raimi wanted to use was The Medieval Dead, but the producers put a kibosh on it. A lot of things in this movie were sort of impacted by decisions that were taken out of Sam Raimi's hands, where producers made decisions on this movie. When this movie came out, it was a big-budget studio film, the first of its kind for the franchise, because everything prior to that had been an independent film, and yet this was a pretty big flop. It made less than $12 million at the box office.
And the production costs skyrocketed, because I'm reading right now for reference Hail to the Chin, the sequel to the other Hail to the Chin, Confessions of a B-Movie Actor.
Hail to the Chin's... He
wrote a sequel last year. One thing that blew my mind in that book was that him and Sam, and I believe that they had a co-creator as well. Was it another producer? I can't recall, but they basically made $150,000 on the first Evil Dead movie, which is not a hell of a lot of money considering the box office it did. That's what they ended up with. So, but again, that just speaks to like how important it is to have the back end, that they call it in Hollywood, the back end. Mm-hmm. If you don't get a cut of that, you're just basically not on the hook, but you make what you make, and it's everything is in the studio's control. And that's what happened with Army of Darkness. Mm-hmm. You had a big studio taking the reins and wresting creative control from these guys. And
right.
Medieval Dead, that's a badass name. I did not know that. I love that. Because Army of Darkness is kind of ridiculous in a way. Like, I don't know. I don't know. It doesn't have the continuity that that name would have given it.
Mm-hmm. Even Evil Dead 3, : Army of Darkness, yeah. would have been more effective.
Yeah.
But see, the thing about this movie, and I guess this is... hold on. Let me just go back for one sec. This film was produced by infamous Italian producer Dino De Laurentiis, who was known for producing some incredible hits and some gigantic flops. Interestingly enough, a couple things. First of all, this is the first and only movie where Bruce Campbell was the lead actor. Okay? Second of all, when principal photography was finished, the production company sat on this thing for a full year, playing with it, tinkering with it, test audiencing it. Is that a verb? Test audiencing?
Yeah.
And in doing so, the ending changed, other things changed. Bruce Campbell was pissed that this film was being sat on for a full year before it was released. But it did not do well as an original release, but this is one... I wrote an article way back when for Dread Central. I can't remember exactly the title was, but it was something like 10 Redeemed Horror Films. Films that, when they originally came out, were either panned critically or fared poorly commercially, or both. The Thing, movies like Halloween 3, movies like Trick or Treat, etc. And I'm not talking about the Trick or Treat with Ozzy and
Gene Simmons.
Skippy from Family Ties, but with the anthology, etc. This is a redeemed horror film because it has become a cult film. Audiences adopted it. Audiences love it. But for me, as someone who loves the pure horror of the first Evil Dead and enjoys the deft mixture of horror and slapstick of Evil Dead 2, this is veered way too much in the opposite direction, in the humor and slapstick category, and it just doesn't do it for me. I've watched this film at least 6-7 times, and each time I try and love it as much as I do the other two films that preceded this one.
Mm-hmm.
I love Evil Dead. I've got action figures, I got memorabilia, I've met Bruce Campbell, I've read his books, I got a Necronomicon tattoo, but I don't really care for Army of Darkness. And one of the reasons I don't care for it is because, to me, this movie is almost like the variable definition of background movie. You could put it on, and it's there, and you could be doing something else, and you could glance up the screen, oh, there's a fun catchphrase, etc.
Yeah, go there's back a fun fight doing. Scene, and then yeah. it just not doesn't... Mm.
Whereas Evil Dead 1 and 2 were relentless thrill rides. They were not background movies. They were movies that demanded your attention, grabbed you by the collar, wouldn't let go from the beginning to the end. It was just pure intensity. Whereas this one, I don't know, I just find it to be blah. And if you're, again, if you're a fan of Ashley Williams, the catchphrase sprouter, Ashley Williams, the superhero, you're going to love Army of Darkness. I personally love the incarnation of Ash in part 2, where he's not the milquetoast he was in part 1,
mm-hmm.
but he's not the full-blown superhero he is in Army of Darkness. He's evolving into that.
Yeah, he's asked to carry the whole show here, which is a little bit overbearing as well. And I guess I wasn't aware totally of the extent to which they were tinkering with this, because apparently the ending was altered considerably to make it less negative, presumably so you could... I don't know why. Well, I guess we know why.
Well, I'll explain, because on my Blu-ray it has
okay.
both endings. So
yeah, and just to have him be the star, and then which is fine, I guess, if you're invested in the Ash character, I think it becomes a little overbearing. Mm-hmm. But I think he could be offset against maybe interesting supporting fringe characters, of which there were none, I would say, here. So that's mm-hmm. so he's asked to carry the whole show, and he's really playing off, I guess, Arthur and Henry. Henry's like a Scots North King, which may be a nod to Bruce Campbell's Scottish roots. He's ineffectual. Just a big, like, red-headed, bearded whoever.
Mm.
There's no one there with him. There's a love interest. Like, there's nothing.
In Evil Dead 2, he pretty much carried a lot of the show as well. I mean, you had Danny Hicks in there, you had other characters, but it pretty much was a Bruce Campbell show. And one thing you can't deny is here in Army of Darkness is the pure physicality that BC brings to the world.
Yeah.
The dedication. I mean, this is a guy that's literally beating the shit out of himself to pull off some of these scenes. And he can carry a movie. However, there has to be worthy antagonists. And the Deadites in Evil Dead 1 and 2 were fantastic.
Mm-hmm.
I'm going to swallow your soul and all that wicked stuff. Whereas here, I mean, yes, they did want to homage Jason the Argonauts and whatnot. But they're just skeletons. There are a couple Deadites, but it's really just skeletons. And again, studio mandated decision because they figured if you kill a skeleton, you're going to get dust and bones. If you kill a deadite, you're going to get blood and gore. They wanted this to appeal to as wide an audience as possible.
Yeah, so no tree root scene or anything really, no transcended, like ripping the jugular out horror. Yeah, it was just more campy, campy deaths. Or they're not even deaths because they're dead.
I mean, you got to remember that Evil Dead 1 and 2, upon initial submission to the ratings classification board, both got X ratings. And they had to keep going back and forth in terms of cutting pieces here and there, changing things in order to bring it down to an R. But this one was made purely with the most... and again, I think this was producer mandated, the most mass appeal in mind, which meant really getting rid of those wonderful deadites, those wonderful scenes of gore, the pure intense horror of the first, etc., in favor of, and yeah, again, I mean, another hallmark of Evil Dead, of the series, of the sundry offsprings and offshoots and whatnot, is the one-liners, the humor, and this one has tons of them. I mean, it's a laundry list, you know? Shop smart, shop S-smart, primitive screwheads, this is my boomstick, hello, yeah. Mr. Fancy Pants, good, bad, it doesn't matter.
Yeah, the she gun. Bitch, and
it just goes on and on.
A few groovies groovy in there as well, yeah.
Exactly. And of course, this is your purely formed Ash. You gotta remember, the first movie, Ashley Williams, that's what he was referred to, he was not that proactive, he was pretty much reactive. Until his buddies started getting offed, right? They went up to the cabin with Scotty and whatnot. So, in the first one, he was pretty much just a skinny, scrawny, little milquetoast guy. He was forced to become a hero. The second one, which many people argue is a remake of the first one, it's not a remake, it's a continuation, although there are a lot of similar beats. He has started to bulk up. He's becoming more the Ash that we know. Gets the boomstick. And he does lose a hand, so he does get the chainsaw on the hand, so that, by the end of the movie, he is the Ash we all know and love. In this one, he's as jacked as he's ever been in the entire series of Evil Dead, and he's fully formed as Ash, the superhero.
Yeah, and this, I guess, also has beats connected to the first two, because there is a rehashing of what happened in the first. Oh, me and my friends were out in the woods, and then so you set. But if they didn't do that, this would have no connective tissue, with the exception of the boomstick and the chainsaw. Like, it barely has any.
Well, no, but at the end of Evil Dead 2, when he defeats the deadites, he then, as he always does, you know, tries to utter the spell or utter the incantation that's going to make him escape whatever, and he ends up in medieval England. So there was that.
Oh, I see. I didn't remember that. Oh, my. Okay. So that explains a lot then. It's been a while since I've seen part two. So, yeah. And
so it was probably the idea of Raimi and Tappert and whoever to then call this a medieval dead, have a ton of deadites, make it another balls-to-the-wall splatterfest. But when Dino De Laurentiis got on board, he started imposing all these rules, such as skeletons, not deadites.
But how ridiculous, because you couldn't pick a time in human history more replete with human depravity and
exactly.
Torture, like the Iron Maiden and all these like wheel torture. And here they have like a pit, and they dump Ash, who's since time traveled back to the year 1300, early Middle Ages, and they try and crush him inside this pit using spikes, but it's completely ineffectual. So they could have drawn on all this, even the battle scenes. There's very, very little blood. So I guess they're going for the Saturday matinee kind of swashbuckling, Raiders of the Lost Ark kind of feel. This series demanded blood and guts, and it was not forthcoming here.
And it's interesting too, because this is an example. Like you talk about this a lot of times in the podcast. The film doesn't know what it wants to be. And in my opinion, Army of Darkness is torn between two audiences. Because on the one hand, you're trying to appeal to the hardcore horror fans that loved Evil Dead 1 and 2. But on the other hand, you're trying to appeal to a whole new audience, a brand new audience, and I guess that's why they took Evil Dead away from the title, because they didn't want to associate it in the multiplex with Evil Dead 1 and 2, who are going to go see it because of the slapstick mayhem. And I think because they tried to appeal to two very disparate audiences at its original release, I mean, it has been redeemed in the minds of horror fans, it ended up pleasing no one.
Yeah, well, I guess it's tonally off. There's tonal shifts. I think there are parts and little vignettes that could have fit easily within the first. Even like the use of daylight is really weird. It's like you're catapulted, no pun intended, to medieval Europe.
I never thought of that.
It's California. It's L.A. You have mountains, and it's so bright. I'm automatically taken out of it, regardless of whether you notice you're in California, which is like a mainstay of filming locales. But even then, I would rather it be dark, because then you have like turrets and... you know, and just the fact that there was no electricity, you could really like forge an interesting, unique background and backdrop for your location, and it isn't. It's just in this. It's just reminds me of one of these comedies where people go back in time and to I can't remember the one. It's been this trope, a standard trope, where you go back in time, maybe with a black guy, to medieval Europe, and you do the, and then comedy ensues. But the tone was just very, very weird. Mm-hmm. And then there are times when it's legit dark. Like I'm thinking when he breaks a mirror, and a bunch of demonic ashes spring forth, and these Lilliputs attack him and tie him down. I thought that was so cool.
That was a highlight of the film.
So fucking awesome.
Yeah. And you had the illusion of the Gulliver's Travels. Then tie down. And I mean, again, I mean, that's just Bruce Campbell at his best, with his physicality, his ability to harness slops of humor, Three Stooges-esque humor, poking in the eye, etc.
Yeah,
there's
awesome.
Also attributed to the movie The Manster, where he's got two heads that are kind of.
Yeah, that was awesome.
So there's a lot of good stuff in this movie, but. Getting back to the tone, it's interesting because you're right. I mean, Evil Dead 1 and 2 both primarily took place at night. And that lent something to the unrelenting terror of the first and the somewhat slapstick yet scary tone of the second. This one, a lot of it took place in daylight. And as I'm watching the movie, and don't get me wrong, I love Ash. I love his bon mots. I love his witticisms. I love his one-liners here. I love the way he reads them. And I say, here comes Mr. Fancy Pants. Hello, Mr. Fancy Pants. I mean, I'm not doing justice at all, because nobody can read these lines like the great cult god Bruce Campbell. Yeah. But this movie, what was presented to audiences, to me, is a combination of Jason the Argonauts, yet again with the skeletons.
With the Harryhausen.
And Harryhausen, exactly. And Monty Python the Holy Grail.
It's good,
very
yeah.
hard to take it seriously. And again, I love Monty Python the Holy Grail, but that's not horror, you know? This is not chocolate and peanut butter.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and really, once he gets there, there's some sort of cobble-together thing involving, again, the book, the it's so hard to say. And you're going to have to say it.
Necromonicon.
Ex
Mortis.
Yes. And
brought you, Nick, too.
So, which is just great. It's like some of our favorite horror films have a book that's a conduit to evil, whether it be The Beyond, which with its infamous references to Ibon, the book, and Demons, where they have the incantation of the book, and it brings demons through the screen, and, like, this book stuff is cool. Or was it City of the Living Dead? I can't remember. It might have been The Beyond. It was something Fulci with the book. Yeah. Here, essentially, he has to go find this book in order to have the wizard types, the Merlin character, I don't even remember his name, transport him back into modern time. And they refer to him as modern man and that, but I don't know. It seemed like a weird excuse to tap into the first two. I don't know. They had to have a book. I don't know what.
Well, no. I mean, look. The Necronomicon is Evil Dead, okay? I mean, everything, and I'm talking even Evil Dead as it's continued with, you know, Ash vs. Evil Dead on TV. It's all about the Necronomicon Ex Mortis. That book is the conduit between our world and the demonic world of the Deadites. So you need to have that connective thread.
Well, then he doesn't need an intermediary with this Merlin. He can just go find the book and then be on your merry way. It just seemed like...
The thing about Ash, and again, this you gotta, I'm sorry if I'm being a little bit argumentative, is that as heroic as Ash can be, and as effective as he can be, he's not the sharpest knife in the drawer. And this is certainly exploited in the TV series. But Ash is not a smart man. He needs somebody to sort of tell him what to do.
Oh, I see.
And
okay.
He wouldn't have the wherewithal on his own to go looking for the Necronomicon. He's way more proactive in Evil Dead 2 and Evil Dead, and Army of Darkness than he is in Evil Dead 1. But again, because in Evil Dead 1 he really is just reactive. But no, Ash is not a smart man. And if you watch Ash vs. Evil Dead, they really play up his abject stupidity.
Hmm. But even that, it's just being some sort of go-between between these two warring factions of this, well, essentially, I guess, English versus Scottish, these two warring groups. He brings them together to fight a common enemy when he inadvertently releases the army by saying that infamous catchphrase wrongly.
It's kind of a funny gimmick, but it's... He's somebody who, he's not detail-oriented. He's like, okay, whatever, my name is syllable here or there. The bumbling Ashwin who always makes mistakes... plays into the ending that was actually changed, the original ending, and we'll get to that later on. But no, you can't have an Evil Dead, anything Evil Dead without the Necronomicon, even the video games, what have you. The Necronomicon is as essential to the Evil Dead as, let's say, the glove is to Nightmare on Elm Street, or the hockey mask of the latter day, post 1 and 2, Friday 13th. It's the iconic... Or let's say the ball to the Phantasm.
Okay.
You need to have that book.
So he buggers word three of it. So Klaatu, obviously, Day the Earth Stood Still, Barada, Nektu.
That was a mod.
And boom, the demons come out, the skeletons emerge from their resting place, and then for the final 30 minutes, there's just a lot of battling of medieval men versus skeletons. And that was sort of deteriorated.
And that's where I said it's sort of like, you know, background movie at that point. Like, that you don't really need to watch it that intently, because it's just, it's a very short movie. It's only an hour and 20 minutes, but the, you know, it's the final third is just padded with just battle.
There's a good, sword play in there too, a la maybe Errol Flynn kind of thing. An homage probably to one of his heroes or who knows what, but yeah.
Perhaps I would have enjoyed the final 30 minutes more if he was actually fighting real deadites that bled and dismembering them and, you know, again, once again, yelling, I saw all your soul. But, I mean, there is a character that does fight Evil Ash, and that's a pretty cool character.
That is badass, yeah.
And then Evil Ash ultimately resembles Skeletor from the Master of the Universe movie.
Yes.
So that's cool, too. I mean, there's a lot of cool elements in this movie, but it's such a departure from Evil Dead 1 and 2 that it's...
Another super cool vignette is when, I guess, Evil Ash is taking over his body and spins his head around and makes him, it protracts his skeleton and his skull, and it morphs him into some sort of weird Bill Nye the Science Guy, Senator John Kerry, weird long, it's a red blast from the past reference, but this long horse face, and then it twists, and then with the incredible physical comedy and physicality of Bruce Campbell's face, like his rubber face, he just twists it back into shape, and that was so cool. Right. Again, the second head that springs forth, Manster style, it's just, that was so awesome. And
of course, it was in Evil Dead 2, you had his hand that was possessed by the deadites, his hand was attacking him, he was fighting himself, he was doing these crazy backflips, he had to cut off his own hand.
So that was, very memorable.
Yeah, so being possessed by the deadites is nothing new.
Yeah, here he's got his stump for a hand, and that he's walking around all bandaged up, and then one of the, peon peasant types throws his chainsaw into the pit, and then it's a great scene. He leaps up and then hoists his arm into the air, and then it affixes itself to the stump of his forearm, which was pretty cool. So connected, if you will, to the other two movies that way as well.
And the other thing too that you haven't mentioned is that there's a prophecy, and in this medieval society where people where there's warring factions, and the prophecy is that there will be a man who falls from the sky who will save them all from the deadites, that being Ashley Williams, because he ends up falling from the sky at the end of Evil Dead 2 and also the beginning of this movie with his trusty car, which is an
The Oldsmobile.
Sam Raimi's Oldsmobile.
Yeah.
But this is a movie of moments. Great catchphrases, great moments, cool little set pieces, but with the exception of those moments, there's not a lot of connective tissue that makes it feel something substantial. That's where it pales in comparison to Evil Dead 1 and 2. Again, this is a movie that has legions of fans. Now, they didn't support what was in the theater, but they love quoting this thing. They love saying Hail to the Chief. They love saying Screwhead. They love saying, give me some sugar, baby. You got real ugly real fast.
That's just pillow talk, baby.
and on and on. But again, I mean, it's just very, very, I mean, there are series that changed tonally from the first to the third to the fifth to whatever, but this was, for me, such a jarring tonal shift. Yes, Evil Dead 2 did, I mean, even Evil Dead 1 was not without its humor, and Evil Dead 2 did amp up the slapstick and the humor, but it was not at the expense of the scares, whereas in this one, in my opinion, the humor was on completely the expense of the scares. There really is not one scare in this entire movie. It's just a fun romp, maybe even a comfort movie.
Segue into what I learned. I liked his speech about his Remington. I got a kick out of that. He's just describing in detail this ridiculous wood and then blue steel and whatever, and it was manufactured in Grand Rapids, Michigan. He does this whole spiel about
how
this gun.
For it,
yeah, and then yeah, where you can buy it, and it's just so utterly ridiculous. Another thing was the shoelace line with, I believe it was Arthur, who's bedecked in chainmail or whatever. He says, "Oh, your shoelace," and then of course that's the old gag where you look down and then he decks them. It's like, what? Why was that inserted there? Because the shoes in whatever current stage would not have had shoelaces at
the time.
I know,
I'm saying the same thing.
But even
that,
it's not like this is.
Yeah.
I mean, this is replete with historical anachronisms. But you wouldn't. It's probably part of the point. I mean, Sam Raimi himself shows up in a T-shirt. I missed him, but apparently I read that he was in a crowd scene.
William Lustig is also in this movie.
Oh, wow.
A brief cameo, but I keep missing him each time I see it. Yeah.
But yeah, that didn't. That drew me out of it in a way that the historical inaccuracies might not have regarding their chainmail and the different weaponry and all that. It just, that was really odd. And but what I liked, like the defensive maneuver to block the double eye poke, like straight out of the Three Stooges, where you put your, you bisect your forehead with your hand, so you block it.
Can you do the whole wise guy?
I love that stuff. So that was cool, but it was done in the context of him fighting with himself, with his head sprouting forth. So that worked in a great gross-out fashion, but the medieval battles was just, that was tepid. So yeah, this is a tale of two movies. The darkness part of it really, really worked, and the light, not so much. So that's what I learned. And so what did you learn?
Okay, so let's talk about the ending. In the original ending, which has been circulating around, I mean, this is a film that has been released and re-released a million times. Anchor Bay has had the rights to it for so long, and they put out so many different editions, the Boomstick edition, the Screwhead edition, etc. And so the original ending is out there, either tacked on or as an extra feature. So in the original ending, once all is said and done, Ash is given a potion, and he is meant to take 5 drops. For each drop, he's going to sleep 500 years, and then he's going to wake up in his own time. But Ash being Ash, you know, prone to always making mistakes, not the sharpest knife in the drawer, he takes an extra drop. He takes 6 drops. When he finally wakes up, all pretty much looking like Rasputin, long hair, beard, and he realizes that he slept 100 years too long. And he is now in post-apocalyptic London. So it had a very downbeat ending, in the sense that he's, once again, adrift, just like he was at the end of Evil Dead Part 2. Now, that ending was intended to then lead into Evil Dead 4, where it's now Ash, presumably, fighting the Deadites in post-apocalyptic London. And I'm assuming that Raimi and company were very optimistic that this would make a lot of money, and they'd get an even bigger budget for number 4, and do a whole sort of, you know, Mad Max or Escape from New York or what have you, real kind of go for the gusto horror post-apocalyptic type film. However, the ending we were given, I'm not going to spoil the ending, but that has become canon, and Ash vs. Evil Dead pretty much picks up from that. You have Ash as a young man, an S-Mart employee. Now you got old, slow down, paunchy Ash, still an S-Mart employee, and the Deadites come and things continue. But I really did enjoy the original ending, and I would have loved to have seen that post-apocalyptic Battle of the Deadites continue in an Evil Dead 4. But alas, it was not meant to be, because this film was a financial disaster. The other thing I want to say is that continuity in the Evil Dead movies is something that you don't get a lot of. I mean, the character of Ash changes in each and every movie. Hilariously enough, Linda, his girlfriend,
Bridget Fonda.
Well, that's the thing, dude. Three
shows up for 2 seconds.
Three different actresses in three different movies. So in the first movie, Linda is played by Betsy Baker. Okay, In the second movie, she's played by an actress by the name of Denise Bixler. In this movie, she's played by, of all people, Bridget Fonda, who's there for, as you said before, literally all of 2 seconds. Just enough for you to register, hey, that's Bridget Fonda, and that's the end of that. Well, this was 92. I think she already done Single White Female and a bunch of other movies. She was a name actress, and I guarantee you that there was way more shot with Linda. I mean, why would Bridget Fonda agree to be in a movie if she's only going to be in it for a blink and you miss a cameo? But when the studio started tinkering, they must have cut out all the Linda subplot. Of course, there is another romantic interest, that being Sheila, played by Embeth Devitz. Is that how you pronounce it?
I was wondering myself. But, I don't know.
Yeah, it's just weird. Like, it takes you out. Like, boom, Bridget Fonda. Here she is. Now she's gone.
Yeah.
So, 3 movies, 3 different Lindas, but this Linda was a literal blink and you'll miss it.
Mm-hmm. Star rating.
Yeah.
Whew, I'm going to give it a 3 because I had fun. It's wholly commendable. Again, Saturday afternoon, middle of the day, you're busy cleaning your apartment. You have it on in the background, mixing some drinks, having a coffee. It's there. It's. But beyond that, I'm not going to rewatch it for probably several years. It's fine for what it is. My opinion of it has changed slightly because I was aggressively angry towards it the first time. So 3. How about yourself?
Okay, so I got to give it 2 separate ratings. First, I'm going to give it a rating as a standalone film. Army of Darkness. There's nothing that preceded it. Forget about Evil Dead 1. Forget about Evil Dead 2. This is Army of Darkness. And in that case, I would give it 3 stars for its entertainment value, for the wonderful one-liners, for Bruce Campbell himself. I love Bruce Campbell. I mean, he's one of my heroes. However, as an Evil Dead film, and when I compare it to what came before and also what came after, because what you're seeing now in Ash vs. Evil Dead is pretty much gorier than what you've even done in Evil Dead 1 and 2. Films that earned X ratings at the box office back then, but just shows how social mores have changed over the years. As an Evil Dead film, I have to give this 1.5.
Ooh.
So we're going to split it down the middle, 3 and 1.5, and say, what, 2.25?
Yeah, something like that. I think that's totally fair. Mm-hmm. And be sure to check out our 200th episode coming up in a couple weeks. We got some changes afoot. We will bring you more about that, but some exciting changes to the Really Awful Movies podcast. We hope you enjoy, and we're going to have a look back at how we arrived at this point some 2.5 years into the show, and we will be recounting some of our favorite moments and some of our favorite films and some of our discussions from this past very fruitful and exciting couple of years. So stay tuned.
Yeah, I mean, you mentioned changes. We're going to basically talk about how we got here
and where we're going.
Yeah. So that's coming up in a couple weeks. The 200th episode, spectacular.
Yes, exactly.
I think The Simpsons did that one time.
Exactly.
So
yeah, we hope you check that one out, and we'll talk to you soon.
Take care.